Libria. I congratulate you. At last, peace reigns in the heart of man. At last, war is but a word whose meaning fades from our understanding. At last, we are whole. Librians, there is a disease in the heart of man. Its symptom is hate. Its symptom is anger. Its symptom is rage. Its symptom is war. The disease is human emotion. But Libria, I congratulate you. For there is a cure for this disease. At the cost of the dizzying highs of human emotion, we have suppressed its abysmal lows. And you, as a society, have embraced this cure. Prosium. Now we are at peace with ourselves. And humankind is one. War is gone. Hate, a memory. We are our own conscience now. And it is this conscience that guides us to rate EC10 for emotional content. All those things that might tempt us to feel again. And destroy them.
Librians, you have won!
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Tuesday, August 23rd, 2005. And this would be Newsreel. Your daily report is the woke counterculture defeats the evil of core political tyranny. And we're going to defeat it by any means necessary, even if that means using their own techniques, money, and technology against them. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening, you are as well. Open your mind, Quaid. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. You can get to my live journal by getting to Sean, S-E-A-N underscore Kennedy, K-E-N-N-E-D-Y, like the dead guy dot livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Radio306.com, OspreyRadio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit. You can do whatever you like with it. Please distribute it any way you want to. We don't mind. If you happen to work in a computer store or you happen to be enslaved by one of the big box corporations, make sure that you slide a disc in to the package when the guy comes home from the store and then deny all knowledge afterwards when he brings it back complaining. Let's get straight into some feedback right off the top, right in the beginning here. Let's see now. We got Dear Sean. I've been listening for a few years. That's frightening when I actually consider how many years I've been doing this. And your advice and ranting has helped me to continue on. Well, that's good. I'm glad I'm helpful. I'm emailing you to thank you and to inform you that from your encouragement, I have pushed on and got myself a goddamn job. It's always good to have a goddamn job, because if you don't have a goddamn job, it's very hard to get the money. And, well, you know, it's not that you need the money, it's that everybody else does. Today, I got a job offer for $32,000 a year with full benefits, doing something I enjoy. Also, within 2 years, they expect me to bump me up from a job position I'm not going to explain to a job position I'm not going to explain, which is $46,000. So, yeah, baby, Yeah. So, and this was obviously like typed in a fit of total elation. And I'm very, very happy that my listeners are not just, you know, I don't want to be known as the leader of the homeless out there. I want you guys to make sure that, you've got to look after yourselves. You guys have got to get jobs. And realistically, money, unfortunately, for the time being, until the new age of Aquarius or whatever the hell is going to show up, is what makes the world go around. And provided you get the strength to carry on, the purpose of my broadcast, in case you're wondering, when the senior drill instructor shows up in my head and starts yelling at me and doing all the degrading stuff, what I fall back to at the end of the day, what keeps me doing the broadcast, is the fact that I might be just easing the suffering on a grand scale. If nothing else than some guy in a basement somewhere with no furniture and just a PC who thinks the world is shit, if I can ease his suffering for a little while, I have done my job. Dear Sean, hey man, thanks for the plug. Yeah, I sent this guy a plug. It was really good. His lamp was messed up. No, we're talking about Alien Binary and Pain Magazine, which you have not downloaded and read. You are officially weak. You must do penance and read all the Pain Magazines. You have no idea what it means to hear such amazingly positive feedback. I think if I had to estimate, every article is usually multiple hours of writing and at least an hour of editing per article. Yes, this is why I don't like editing. That's why my spelling sucks. If you do the math, plus the stupid amount of time spent on the Ascarty art, it's quite a project. Yes, I know it is. I know it is Alien Binary. The amount of work that goes into Pain Magazine is staggering. Staggering. And the thing is, he makes it look so effortless. Just like anything else that's really, really high quality from very talented people, it looks like any asshole could do it. However, I do want to give credit where credit is due. This is going on with Alien Binary's letter here. It was actually Capone X who took on the task of transforming the ASCII issue of 14 to PDF. Although many photographs are mine and I give as much assistance as I could, it was Cappy who came through and pulled it all together in a graphical issue. I'm still amazed. Now, Capone X has been around for 10 million years. Seriously, there's cave drawings of Capone X in the Rant Radio caves. The guy has done so much work and has been a background operator for such a long time that I'm totally going to expose the dude for what he is. So, you know, we don't really get a chance. If you check the What the Hell issues, you always hear Capone X out there. Guy came up to my house, met him, we had to slap hands. He was subtle when I met him. The guy should work for the CIA, really. He really should, because he's the perfect gray man. He's awesome, and he's a good shit. So rest assured, we are working on a graphical issue of 15. Hooray! Because that's what I want. I foresee pain being Mondo 2000. Still, I want everyone to please give shouts to Capone X, who has gone above and beyond the call as a pain editor. So the next time you see Capone X, make sure you yell at him. And especially in the IRC, Capone X is to be spoken of only in caps for the first few lines, and then you go back to normal saying, shouts to you for your amazing work on Pain, because no shit, if you think about the amount of work that the guy did, it's really staggering, and we can't give him money, you know, we can't really send him too much free stuff unless, well, people want to send him free stuff, but realistically, man, Capone, way to go, buddy, way to go, and he really is a decent human being. Regarding Captain Wiley's articles, which I don't think I know Captain Wiley that well, which is kind of funny because I knew a guy in the army whose name was actually Captain Wiley, and he was a British piece of shit. Fucking shit eater. Anyway, those were originally updates he sent to a friend about trekking all over the planet this summer. After a second update, I emailed him back an address he had given to reply to. I told him flat out that I wanted to publish the logs. Over the course of months, he had gone to great lengths to keep us updated. I really think it's huge that he was working with me and making the trip something everyone could share. An open source trip, hey? The captain also is a gifted photographer. And you know what? There's a lot of people who think they're good with photography, but they're really not. The professor, my old buddy there, he was an amazing photographer. There's a few people I'm getting, you know, and if you're a photographer out there, send your photographs in. If you live in an urban environment, you're like, I don't know what to shoot. Go shoot cyberpunk photos. Send them into Capone. Send them into Alien Binary. Send them to these guys so that we can start getting the graphical, you know, because pictures are nice. They make the magazines work. And you'd be surprised how easy it is to get artistic photographs if you just start thinking cyberpunk. Go pick up some Shadowrun books. Go pick up, you know, look around the cyberpunk genre. Look at some album covers. Figure out how to take those kind of style of photographs and get to it, man. It's good fun. So I'm hoping that he will let me digitize his photographs for his trip and send them to Capone X so Cappy can work his magic, but all in due time. Again, super thanks to Cappy. Goes on to say how pumped he is about the support, and that was from Alien Binary from Pain Magazine. He's the founder and editor-in-chief of Pain Magazine. And realistically, that is yet another piece of media which we have taken back from the core political tyranny. Dear Sean, I'm the skeptical type. So I decided to do the water bottle experiment for myself, and wow, I was amazed. This is the water bottle experiment I said the other day, where you take the bottle of water and you boil it, and then you let it cool, and there's little white chunks in the water, and nobody knows what the hell that is. At first, I boiled the water, but I didn't see anything. So I decided to peer over my glass and look closer. Holy mother of God, what do I see? Tiny white flaky looking bastards, probably thousands of them, just sending confirmation that there's definitely something in our bottled water. And sure as fucking shit ain't water. So maybe it's minerals. Could be minerals, right? You got to think of that. Is it mineral water? It's supposed to be distilled mineral water. We don't know, right? I don't want to get all yelling and screaming about the chemtrails stuff just yet. I mean, we'd like to have a little bit more evidence, right? But for those of us out there with a chemistry thing going on, Phoenix, if you'd like to tell us what the hell's going on with the little white things in the water, those of us out here in Wog World would sure like to know because, well, you know, sometimes I like to drink bottled water too rather than buying pop. And if I can't drink the bottled water because it's got weird mind control chemicals in there, well, you know, let me know if I'm just doing the tinfoil hat thing or if I've actually got a point here somewhere. So what the hell are the tiny white flaky bastards? That's what I want to know. Dear Sean, a few days ago, someone wrote in about being a WOG in training, and you went on about you're either a WOG or you're not, which is like a choice thing. It's like, I'm doing the WOG thing, I'm not doing the WOG thing, which is the way it's supposed to be. I think most people understand this fact. Yes, and I'm sure most of us know there is no such rank as WOG, nor do we have a secret decoder ring when we've completed the training. Yes, because that's how people exploit you to make money. And I will not have a movement that I've been involved with exploited to make money. I believe that being a trainee basically means that you're getting all your shit nailed down, amassing kit, and trying to prepare yourself both mentally and physically for an uncertain future. Still, this future will probably contain info, cyber, and civil warfare. Also, I draw your attention to look up 4th Enoch, right? 4th Enoch War Theory. That's a pretty good way. If you want to know what's going down the pipe, you want to get intellectual about it, check out the 4th Enoch War Theory. There is much to do. Then again, I could be reading too far into this. Keep up the good work, bro. We need more WOGs like you from communists. Well, that's a very good point that, you know, it could be stated that a WOG in training is either, you know, trying to get his stuff nailed down. But it could also be argued, I would not like to say that. I'd like to stay away from the training thing because, really, WOGs are always getting things nailed down. I mean, I've been doing this for a pretty long time, and quite often, right when I think I've got everything nailed down, reality shifts, things change, and you've got to be able to, you know, you got to be able to adapt, okay? The whole key here is to be adaptable. If you nail everything down and you're not, you know, being solid, like if you're too rigid, you will break, you know? And we start getting into, like, the whole Chinese theory and stuff like that. When it comes to the tactics of how you should orchestrate or perhaps how you should, how do I explain this? The architecture of your reality, the architecture of your intellect should be with purpose but still remain flexible. This is why I'm a big fan of the book The Dynamic Sphere by Morishi Ueshiba. Now, it's a martial arts text, okay? It's a martial arts text, but the guy talks a lot about how to use violence, and it is violence, don't ever shit yourself, in a very positive way and how not to harm people and how to be a beacon of light and other people in your shadow, and when they attack you, they're merely asking for help. And realities like this is very, very interesting stuff. So I would state that we are always in training, and every WOG is in training. So if you're going to be a WOG in training, that's fine, as long as you recognize that everyone is a WOG in training. And like, you know what the fat man said, if you meet Buddha on the road, make sure you kill him. Now, on to Sergeant Tibbs' email. Dear Mr. Kennedy, you know I'm in trouble when I get a Mr. Kennedy letter. This is in relation to what you said on today's program, Thursday. You were talking about SWAT teams shooting the guy who was selling weed. You started to go kind of on a tangent and said, no one should use drugs recreationally if you do, you're a junkie. No. What I said was, if you use drugs in a parking lot, you're a junkie. That's a tongue-in-cheek way of making sure that you're not, you know, there's a difference between smoking a bit of weed and playing some video games to smoking weed before you do anything that's fun, okay? There's a difference there. If you need to smoke weed in order to enjoy what you're doing, you have a problem. Now, I'm going to go back to the letter. But just to point out, that's a bit of a misquote there. I can understand because I say a lot of crazy things, and he's probably put together two different statements and to make a very extreme statement here. And that is not the case. If you use drugs recreationally, if you do, you're a junkie. That is totally not what I meant. And if that was communicated to you, Mr. Tibbs, Sergeant Tibbs, then I would apologize because that was not my intent. But, you know, that said, this is, you know, well, let's get on with the rest of the email. From what you said is a bunch of people using marijuana while playing Halo on a Saturday night, the same as a crackhead breaking into cars and stealing radios for his next fix. Obviously not. Obviously not. I mean, that's ridiculous to make that comparison. Or that a bunch of guys throwing a party and getting drunk are the same as a meth head's breaking off pieces of his face and smoking them. Ah, the corpse crystal. Also, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that that you and Sim have both used weed recreationally. So by wording you choose, the same guy shooting heroin is an alleyway next to a preschool. Dun, dun, dun! Well, obviously, Sarge, you got to bear in mind that this whole, you know, your comparison there, obviously I'm not making that statement. But what I am saying, though, is that drugs have a way of weaseling into your reality. And if you don't keep a track of that, and if you think that you always have to do drugs in order to have fun, that's not cool. Now, if you use drugs recreationally, I don't think drugs should be a recreation. Okay, there's a difference between using them recreationally and using drugs as recreation. Recreation means fun. It means getting out there and doing stuff, not sitting alone somewhere being baked, because it's not good for your mind and body. When you consider in our society how little physical activity we really do, do what you want. You want to shoot heroin? Go the fuck ahead. I mean, we live in an educated society. You want to waste your life? Fill your boots. You want to shoot yourself? Fill your boots. You lose all respect from me, but that's it. You know, so, you know, common sense, okay, is what we're talking about here. You know, all things in moderation and all that good sort of jazz. I personally do not agree with anything other than, well, I'm going to go out here and say naturally occurring drugs, but I'm even totally chicken shit. The heaviest thing I've ever done, and this is God's own truth right now, the heaviest thing I ever tried was hash oil. That was it, and that was so frightening for me. I didn't enjoy it. It wasn't my trip, you know? So I did it once years ago, and now, you know, I'm just not interested in that because, well, drugs fuck with your mind, and my mind is the only thing I've really got, so I try to, you know, keep that, you know, because at the end of the day, if your brain is hooped, you can hoop anything, right? You hoop your arms, legs, body, whatever, but if you hoop your brain, you're really hooped. You're like, there's no way out of that. He goes on to say, now it's your show, and your opinion I respect, but when you lump a diverse population together, drug users, and then use a negative word to describe them, it seems a little bigoted. True. However, I will agree that there are junky pieces of shit out there that need to be helped, rather it's whether it's rehab or a 39-cent solution. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, this the whole drug use thing is a very sticky thing because you got to look at it and go, where's the line? Where's the line? And if you realize that drugs are a focus in your life, even, you know, being that, oh, I can't wait for Friday because we're all going to get high and play Halo. Well, as long as it's the playing Halo that's the focus and not the getting high part, then I'd probably say that's all right. But if you're starting to move around things in your day and carrying drugs with you wherever you go, you might have a bit of a problem there, and you might have to look at that and realize, okay, you know, and we're talking about people who are doing it for other than medical reasons. You know what I mean? If you have, like, let's say some desert warrior, okay, comes back from Iraq and he's been, you know, geeking people left, right, and center. He comes back and he cannot function. He cannot get a job. But if he smokes a bit of a joint and he's able to go to work then and he's able to work and get his work done and focus on what he's doing and his tasks and he's very productive and is able to maintain his job, thereby bringing home money for his family, do I think he's a junkie? No, absolutely not. That's a totally different ball of wax. This is a guy using a tool to get through his day because he's got a condition that has arisen in his life. And it goes on. I mean, I could do a whole show just on drug use. So please, please, don't ever think for a moment that I would just call, you know, someone who, when I say this statement, if you're doing drugs in a parking lot, you're a junkie. That means that you need to do them. Like, who wants to do drugs in a parking lot? Nobody does. But there's lots of people who have to smoke up, otherwise they won't enjoy the movie. And that is what I would say you have to guard against. And I'm sure Sergeant Tibbs would agree with me on that. Let's move on to the news. In BioArmor news, and this was sent to me by Ronan Seria. Now, this is very cool, because I've had some mind awareness training, and this is neat. Danish scientists have made a scientific discovery with significant humanitarian and environmental potential. They have shown that it is possible to produce plants which change color in the presence of specific compounds within the soil, opening the way for the first bomb and landmine detection plant. Very cool. Danish company Arisa Biodetection has been working on the plant for several years, but has now developed a plant with a stage where it is becoming a commercially viable biodetection system that can change color from green to red within 3 to 5 weeks of growth. So you lay these plants down, they spread, everywhere where the plants are red, there's a landmine. That's hot. This technology is being developed to detect explosives present in landmines and unexploded ordnance, UXO, in soil, as well as detect and remove heavy metals in polluted soil. The invention may significantly reduce the speed of removal of landmines, and the UXO in cultivatable areas to permit the subsequent use of cleared areas for agriculture to maximize socioeconomic benefits. The plants will be tested with gradually to introduce a landmine and UXO removal operations as technology matures. Also, it's very easy to teach indigenous population. You know what I mean? Like, I actually, someone could tell me this. You know, I got a question for the WOGs. Years back, we're talking 1995, I was given a Superman comic book, okay? And this Superman comic book was made for the children in Yugoslavia to teach them about mine awareness. But it's an actual DC comic, and I'm wondering if the thing's worth anything, because I've never even seen it listed in any comic convention books or whatever. It was made by the United Nations, and it was given out to kids in Yugoslavia. So it's a pretty rare comic book. Does anybody out there know, you know, can give me up, can point out, because I haven't even found the fucking thing online. I can't find it anywhere. I'd like to know, if it's worth anything. But that said, it's kind of sad asking about money for a comic book regarding landmines, because landmines are a sick industry issue. But the thing is that when they put that comic book out, the kids went into the fields thinking that Superman would come down and save them, which is kind of a sad statement to go on and say. But so they had to stop circulating the comic books. Now, the thing is, though, that if you were to teach these kids, you see where the red is? Don't step on the red, because there's landmines there. Now, that's a very easy thing to communicate to children and to indigenous peoples, and that directly will save lives. This is exactly the kind of thing where I go, okay, genetic engineering in plants, that is a good thing if it can clear landmines, because we're laying landmines 25 times as fast as we're clearing them. And if we can start getting plants in there which can monitor the ground for landmines, well, hey, and pollution, hey, that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. Now, in Mud Hut News, each year, thousands of Pakistani children learn from history books that, and this is in their history books, it teaches them that Jews are tight-fisted money lenders and Christians are vengeful conquerors. Well, it could be said that Christians really are vengeful conquerors, and I don't know any Jews, so I can't make a statement about tight-fisted money letters, but it seems to me that Christians kind of are vengeful conquerors. But anyway, one textbook tells kids they should be willing to die as martyrs for Islam. Now, that one I have a problem with. I'm like, whoa, telling children they should die for stuff is not on. They aren't being indoctrinated by extremist mullahs in Madras. They aren't being indoctrinated by extremist mullahs in madrasas. The private Islamic seminaries often blamed for stoking militancy in Pakistan. They are pupils in public schools learning from textbooks approved by the administration of President Pervez Musharraf. Since joining the U.S. as an ally in its war on terror 4 years ago, Musharraf has urged Pakistanis to shun radical Islam and pursue enlightened moderation. Very good idea. Musharraf and U.S. officials say education reforms are crucial to defeating extremism in Pakistan, the only Islamic nation armed with nuclear weapons. Wow, that's frightening. Yet reformers who study the country's education system say public school lessons are still promote hatred against non-Muslims and urge jihad or holy war. I've been arguing for the longest time that, in fact, our state system is the biggest madrasa, said Ruben Seigal, U.S.-trained expert on education. We keep blaming madrasas for everything, and of course they're doing a lot of things I would disagree with. But the state ideologies of hate and violent negative nationalism are getting out there where madrasas cannot hope to reach. So, you know, this makes me wonder, because I've noticed here in Vancouver, and this is on the west coast of Canada here, we have some Islamic schools. We do have, you know, Islamic Christian schools, just like we've got, or Islamic Christian schools. We have Islamic religious schools, not Christian schools. They have these Islamic schools, and they're private schools, and the girls, you know, they're raised according to Islamic, you know, principles and stuff like that. So I wonder if anybody's looking at what they're teaching the children in these Islamic schools. Should they be able to teach the kids whatever they want? Is that an idea? Is a hate crime really a thought crime, and should we not bother with that? I mean, if the parents believe in it, right, and the school teaches it, and they offer a private service, do we have the right to stop that? I'd be interested to know what you have to say about that. You can get me at newsreel@rantradio.com. Now on to privacy news, sent to me by Thunderspud. And the last, actually, I haven't called out anybody's names. Yeah, Mud Hut was Thunderspud, and of course, BioArmor was Ronan Saria. Yeah, I'm giving out props. I'm giving out props. But Thunderspud's other article here in privacy news, and it seems that there's a summary of a new bill that's coming through, the Family Education Rights and Privacy Act, also known as FERPA. FERPA. Sounds very, something like Gizmo would say. But anyway, there's a summary. Like most legislation, the title is exactly the opposite to intent. Under the first bulleted section dealing with who has access to all data, access to all data the school gathers. Schools can release any data collected to specified officials for audit or evaluation purposes, end quote. So that means recruiters, business companies, whatever, as well as to comply with a judicial order or lawfully issued subpoena. So that's DHS, FBI, CPS, or any alphabetical, you know, kind of organization. I've got three letters, give me the data. Without any consent, without any consent or informing of the students or parents. Also, right after the list of folks who can get information at any time, there's a section dealing with directory information, starting with schools may disclose, without consent, directory information, such as a student name, address, telephone number, date, place of birth, honors and awards, and dates of attendance. Now, that is good for marketing in a big, big way. The section is qualified as to who can ask for this. The only requirement is the school's part listed is their parents must be notified in some manner, such as a special letter. Oh, so that the parents must be notified, with such as a special letter, inclusion in the PTA bulletin, student handbook, or newspaper article. So the paper can go, yeah, we ran it in this paper. These kids are getting disclosed. Thanks. And if the parents aren't monitoring the means because they're busy and their parents are trying to work and shit, they'll miss it. The disturbing thing about the whole summary is that, at least from how I read it, the system is opt-out. Permission to disclose is assumed unless you know this exists and write a blanket denial. So that's what you need to do. You need to take a look at this order, draft up a bill saying that my school can't, you know, give away any information. Tell, if you're still in school, tell your parents that this is so that people can't advertise to us and we don't get any more junk mail and people don't, you know, disclose anything about where we live and stuff like that. Get your parents to sign it, bring it to school, submit it. There you go. Bing, bang, boom. Everybody's good to go. Sounds like fun to me. Now, in Android or synthetic biology news. Now, this is crazy. How's this for a sci-fi article right here? This is almost cyberpunk news right here. Sent in by Kizzle, I might add. They're called synthetic biologists, and they boldly claim the ability to make never-before-seen living things on one genetic molecule at a time. Talk about playing God. They're mixing, matching, and stacking DNA chemical components like a microscope Lego blocks in an effort to make biologically based computers, medicines, and alternative energy sources. Good on ya. The rapidly expanding field is confounding the taxonomist's century-old system to classify species, raising concerns about the new technology's potential for misuse. Yeah, bioweapons much. Those scientists have been combining the genetic material of two species for 30 years now. The work has remained relatively simplistic. Ah, but things are changing. Scientists might add one foreign gene to an organism to produce a drug like insulin. The technique is more art than science, given the brutal trial and error it takes to create cells that make drugs. So the new breed of biologists is attempting to bring the order to the hit and miss chaos, or attempting to bring order to the hit and miss chaos of genetic engineering by bringing to biotechnology the same engineering strategies used to build computers, bridges, and buildings. The idea is to separate cells into their fundamental components and rebuild new organisms in a much more complex way of genetic engineering. The burgeoning movement is attracting big money and some of the biggest names in biology, many of whom are attending the Life Engineering Symposium that begins Friday in San Francisco, which I imagine is last Friday. Synthetic biology is a genetic engineering rethought, said Harvard Medical Center researcher George Church, a leader in the field. It challenges the notion of what's natural and what's synthetic. Well, that statement there makes me go, well, if it occurred in nature, it would be natural. If it occurs due to man's intervention, that would be synthetic, or at least, at the very least, altered. Already, synthetic biologists have created a polio virus and another small virus by stitching together individual genes purchased from biotechnology companies. Well, good for you. Nice of you to make that polio virus. Why don't you make something else? Now, researchers are getting closer to creating more complex living things with actual utility. In Israel, Israel's doing a lot of wild tech stuff, eh? Scientists have created the world's smallest computer by engineering DNA to carry out mathematical functions. Wow. I mean, when you think about what if you were to inject neurons into your brain with a predisposition to mathematical functions, what could you do to the human mind? J. Craig Venter, the entrepreneurial scientist who mapped out the human genome, announced last month that he intends to string together genes to create, from scratch, novel organisms that can produce alternative fuels such as hydrogen and ethanol. Very interesting stuff. This is like, wow. You know, pretty soon we're going to be flying around in giant sharks like the brood. That'd be fun. And as well, we got some cyberpunk kit for you, for all of you out there under massive surveillance in our massive surveillance state and culture. Everyone has seen that there are, you know, bugs and surveillance equipment out there in the world. But how about a really cheap bug detector? Bug detectors have normally been big, big dollars, okay, to get actually a sweeper to sweep a room, make sure it's clear with an antenna and things of that nature. Well, it seems that here's a cheap one. How cheap? How about $20? And it was sent to me by the Caps Locker. This is a great piece of kit for the AWOL bag, even for your daily carry. Detect any spy camera. Well, I couldn't really say any spy camera. But detect most spy cameras or wiretapping devices in a home, office, almost anywhere with this RF signal detector. It detects a 100 to 2600 megahertz frequency signal within a 1 to 10 meters, 32 feet area. Just press and hold the switch button down. Move it from left to right. If the red LED flashes, you're close to a device. Protect your privacy or information. Avoid being targeted of unwanted wireless tapping. Very, very cool. Now, the features of this device are as follows. Its general features are RF technology. Like I said, red signal power LED, green signal power. Detector runs on one 23A 12-volt battery, which is included. Okay, so you got to have a 12-volt battery for that. It's pretty simple. You know, it's a hold down and sweep kind of a thing. So for $20, hey, not bad. Now in Matrix Revenge news, we all remember the Matrix, not the film. We're talking about the computer program that was amassing all information for all law enforcement agencies together inside the United States. Now it apparently died, fell off the books, didn't really work. But there's a lot of states that still knew it, who still use it. So who's picking up the ball again? Of course, not calling it the Matrix. It's the UK Gattaca State. Yay! A computer system allowing police to share details of dangerous offenders has been unveiled by the Home Office. The £10 million Violent Sex Offenders Registry, VISOR, is intended to help reduce reoffending and contains information on 47,000 people. It controversially includes details on people who have not been convicted but are still considered to be a public danger. How does that work? If you're not convicted of a crime, that means that you are innocent. I like how they change the term innocent to not convicted. You see how that works? That's very interesting how they do that. Now, normally, I wouldn't really have a problem with the Violent Sex Offenders Registry, but when they say that people who are not convicted but are considered a public danger, who considers them that? Bob? Bob doesn't like them? How does that work? You know? The National... Minister Fiona MacTaggart said that VISOR, the name of this database, could help reduce crime. It was a step change in public protection. A steep change in public protection. The national database has been made available to all police forces and expected to be rolled out as a probation service next year. A pilot is also being carried out in the prison service. Now, you can bank that they'll just start something for sex offenders, violent offenders, and then they just expand it to include everyone. Previously, police and probation officers fed offenders' details into a local database, which made it difficult to track them as they moved around the UK. The new system's launch follows the Bychart inquiry into how two police forces failed to properly vet Soham killer Ian Huntley. I see. Huntley was able to get a job as a school caretaker in Cambridgeshire despite several accusations of sex-related crimes in Humberside. The inquiry report called for a national intelligence IT system for all police to share information. Now, there's reasons for and against this. I think that generally a violent sex offenders registry is a good idea, provided it's used for violent sex offenders. Bear in mind also that I would rather see violent sex offenders who are deemed, you know, 100% guilty. You know, they know for a fact, they got the video footage, there's no shadow of doubt, the guy's convinced, he did it, all the rest of it. The guy should be not imprisoned, not added to a registry, but killed. Because generally, these people, they reoffend. And if they've reoffended, like, you know, depending on how you do it, maybe you could do a three strikes, you're out kind of thing. Like, you do it once, get some therapy. You do it again, you get more therapy. You do it a third time, you get killed. That's how it works. Well, Sean, by your thing, that means you get two free. Well, yeah, but it's one way of making sure you're not killing the wrong guy. With a three strikes, you're out policy, it's really, really difficult for a guy to get framed three times, I would think. Now, in cyberculture news, this is kind of sad. This is kind of a sad story. I got to be honest with you. I had heard of these guys, but I didn't know much about them. But apparently, a pioneering electronic community known as The Well, is being sold off. Set up in 1985, before the net was widely used, the Well helped to define the basic ethic and etiquette of online life. This is back in 85. Okay, for those of us who are alive in 85, there's probably people listening right now who weren't even born yet. But for those of us who were online back around that time, they remember the Well quite fondly. Many of the early members of the Well have gone on to become the guiding lights of the net as it has risen to its current levels of prominence. The community was bought in 1999 by the Salon Media Group, which now wants to concentrate on the Eponymous magazine. The Well, or Whole Earth Electronics Link, was started by Stuart Brand, one of the key members of the counterculture movement of the 60s that, among many other things, spawned the personal computer and the first virtual communities. Wow. The name was inspired by the Whole Earth catalog, which Brand published, and it became a Bible for the civil libertarians, activists, and hippies that swept up in the 60s radical movement. Very cool. When it started, the Well was a bulletin board that swiftly became a place to hang out for those inspired by the potential of cyberspace and online worlds. As it grew and moved towards the web, it attracted tens of thousands of members, organized around discussion groups or conferences on any and every subject. The Well initially helped people find and chat with those who shared their interests in a way rarely possible before. It was also on the Well that many of the first discussions about online privacy, civil rights, and freedom were held. Well, now it seems that Salon is going to sell the Well to someone, and they hope to generate like about $500,000 in advertising revenue. It's neat to follow stories like this. Is this just natural? Can it be changed? Is it a sad story? Is it a happy story? I don't know, but it is a story worth merit here on Newsreel. Now, another story here, which is really scaring me now. You know how I've been mentioning on and on about how, you know, the books are on their way out, and I've been covering it as book-burning news? Well, now they're starting to turn everything electronic, and this is very quickly becoming the Ministry of Truth. In Kutztown, which I guess is somewhere in the States, pupils must, the students in this high school must use Apple Lite laptops for schoolwork. It's mandatory to use Apple laptops, okay? And it's all part of an increasing trend in the United States to use schools and universities as marketing and promotion outlets. This is like a huge, huge way. Like, if anyone out there wants to start something, maybe we should start like some kind of a public homeschool high school thing, like a way to do homeschooling where communities school their own kids. You know, they go to different houses on different days or something like this, because high schools are being targeted. The entertainment cartels are in the process of successfully turning American universities into corporate police and marketing divisions. They even have their very own educational programs in place, and they're run by school staff. So why shouldn't Apple do the same, having already convinced Duke University that iPod music players are essential education tools? Now, instead of textbooks, 340 students at Empire High School in Vail, Arizona, will use iBooks, laptops made by Apple, as the Southeast Side District opens the state's first all-wireless, all-laptop public high school, says the Arizona Star. Interesting. So if you want to do you have to have an Apple laptop. It's mandatory. Students will go to classrooms and teachers will create lesson plans, but textbooks are making way for electronic and online articles. Now, I'm sure that you're just not allowed to use another laptop. You don't have to have a laptop, or maybe you do have to have a laptop. It's kind of sad. In February, Bill Gates spoke before the National Governors Alliance, calling the American high school obsolete. He says a story on Gates called for more than just advances in technology. He wants a systematic look at effectiveness of high schools across the country. I wonder what software he wants these high schools to run on, eh? It's a big investment for a growing district, says the Star. The laptops run at $850 a pop, and the district will hand out laptops to 350 students to keep for an entire year. Eventually, the administration hopes an enrollment will hit 750. A set of textbooks run about $500 to $600, Calvin Baker, superintendent for the Vail Unified School District, said. And because the books are used for 6 years, the government textbook might still reference Bill Clinton as president. We really don't know for sure how well this plan will work, Baker admitted. Well, right off the top, if you use a computer for 6 years, you are horribly out of date. Furthermore, you give computers to high school students, and you expect that laptop, even with the technology, the components of the laptop will not last 6 years. Anyone who's in tech knows you're going to get, if you're lucky, 3 to 5 years out of a laptop. That's it. So this is a massive money grab by the IT world to get more cash for the laptops. Okay, that's why I'm like, this is not incredibly cool. Not so sure that I like this. I think we should stick with books. But again, this is the trend we're going to see. Eventually, maybe instead of, well, laptops are expensive, maybe we should use PDAs. That way, the concern here is not really the cash for the books. That's not my concern. My concern is the fact that knowledge is becoming very, very flexible and there's very few archives. That's why hard copy books are very soon going to become hard currency. Now, in NASA news, sent to me by Grayscale, and let me get through this article, then I'll talk a little bit about NASA. NASA leaders guilty of smugness and arrogance. Well, that's not really, you know, a crime. But anyway, they failed to learn from the past lessons in the drive to get the space shuttle back into orbit, experts say, in a scathing dissent to a probe into efforts to make the program safer. Now, understand the shuttle was only... Let me just get through this here. It is difficult to be objective based on hindsight, but it appears to us that lessons should have been learned have not been. Perhaps we've expected or hoped for too much, seven of the Flight Task Force 26 members wrote. The seven panelists conceded that the quality of people were employed in the shuttle program and their improvements have been made, but found leadership in the agency lacking. Well, they're engineers. They're not really leaders. You know what I mean? A lot of engineers are kind of trolls. They lock them in cages and they turn out hard data because they spend a lot of time in their brains. NASA's leaders must break this cycle of smugness, substituting for knowledge. Interesting. The Minority Report said. That's what they call it, the Minority Report. The full group, known as the Stafford Kobe Task Group, after the two astronauts in charge were set up to ensure that NASA had met requirements of the investigation in the Columbia tragedy in 2003. The task force released a summary of its final report in June, which found that NASA had made the shuttle fleet safer, but had not met three of the 15 return flight recommendations. Those requirements included the problem of ice and foam detached from the fuel tanks during liftoff with the potential to damage the shovel's protectivity reentry shield, which is a big deal because if that shield takes a dump, everybody dies. Discovery's mission was marred during launch last month when a piece of foam flew off the tank but fortunately missed the orbiter. A piece of foam from the fuel tank was blamed for inflicting critical damage to the heat shield on the left wing of Columbia, which broke up upon reentry, killing all seven astronauts on February 1st, 2003. In the Minority Report, the seven detected an air of insularity in NASA, whatever that means, management inappropriate for such a high-risk operation. Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they didn't have any money. The recurrence of apparently preventable accidents in the seemingly unwillingness to learn should be sufficient to install some humility to temper what looks like arrogance, the dissenters warned. During the past 2 years, we have not witnessed much in such form of humility. Leaders of the task force report downplayed the dissent, saying other members of the group were not disturbed by the safety and management culture at NASA. Now, it should be stated, NASA is a very cool place. Okay, I gotta say, when I was down there, the people at NASA I met were really, really cool. But whenever you get into a lot of really heavy, you know, science sort of atmospheres, sometimes people get their shit in a knot and everybody gets a little bit upset and a little bit strange. This is not so cool. You know what I mean? When I was down at NASA, there was a lady, and she's probably one of the most impressive women I've ever seen in my entire life. She's about, oh, I don't know, she had to be 50-something, probably in her early 60s. And she would go stand up inside of, you know, you go into, this is down at the Kennedy Space Center, though. You walk in there, and there was a room that you walk into, and there's all these screens set up, eh? And she would turn it on, and, you know, the room fills up with people, and she would give a presentation about NASA, you know. And she would turn on the screens and point to people on the screens, and it was a live feed to Mission Control, and whoever was in there, she'd talk about. The thing is, though, that anybody could have been in that room, and this broad had every single person memorized. It was unbelievable. She'd turn on the monitor, and then there'd be, like, a woman standing there. She goes, oh, that's this astronaut. You know, she went to this high school. She got these kind of grades. Her dog was named this. Her parents' name was this. Oh, and that guy over there, he's like a third-line engineer who worked on these five projects. He went to this high school. I'm like, holy cow. This lady's like a Tom Clancy spy. This, you know, and she went on like this for, like, an hour. I mean, it scared the hell out of me how intense this woman was. I was, like, amazed with the memory recall and the brain power down there at NASA. And people at that time, there's, you know, the guys paying for the Russians to go up to the space station and spend time there. And somebody asked about that. And the NASA standpoint was, well, we need to get off the rock. So however we can get off the rock, that's cool. Those guys down there at NASA have got the little blue ball theory really worked out. And that whole agency, you know, it might be worthwhile that if I was ever going to get behind fundraising for something, like if I was really going to get behind and create a fundraiser for something, maybe the WOGs, if we were going to put cash behind something, maybe we should start dumping money into NASA. Because somebody, somewhere, has to get us off this rock. And you know what? I mean, why reinvent the wheel? Why make our own space agency when we can just fund theirs? I don't know. I haven't heard a lot of bad stuff about NASA. Maybe it's corrupt. I don't know. I mean, this is the first bad thing I've really heard about them, but it's something to check out. Maybe I should ask Richard Hoagland about it, see what he says. Now, I've got a really disturbing story there for all you Canadians listening. All right, this is one sent to me by Agent Thoth. And he sent in this really disturbing Canadian Patriot Act story, which is disturbing the hell out of me. So I'm going to really read you the email because it's a bit of a summary. And I suggest that you go and check this out. This is like pretty much the most important thing on the show today. Hi, Sean. Apparently, the Canadian government wants to introduce legislation which, to me, sounds a lot like parts of the U.S. Patriot Act in dealing specifically with the Internet. In a nutshell, a bill would be introduced which will update, quote-unquote, current wiretapping laws to apply to digital communications. Very interesting stuff here. The bill is defended by the claim that no new offenses will be added to the list which will justify a wiretap. But what they're not saying is that current offenses, which are non-enforceable because of the nature of the Internet and possibly cell phone technology, not too well-versed on the subject, will now be enforceable, at least in theory. Well, great. We get to catch those bad guys that eluded us before, right? Wrong. The really bad guys, the ones the proponents of the bill claim to be their intended target, will be completely unaffected. Those who care to be invisible will remain invisible by using public or private hotspots or encryption to ensure they can communicate in private. This bill will only affect those who are using the Internet to commit small-scale or victimless crimes. Copyright infringements come to mind, where the criminals believe their crimes are minor enough they won't be caught or prosecuted. The most draconian effect of this bill is that it would force ISPs to maintain logs of users and Internet traffic in a format suitable for auditing by police in case of an investigation. Kind of scary. Compare this with the wiretapping laws. We're only updating laws here, remember? And you'll see how much further such legislation would take us into panopticon. Law enforcement does not demand that Bell Canada and all other telephone service providers maintain searchable, traceable, indexed, and summarized audio recordings of all conversations occurring on their phone lines. Wiretapping occurs after such a warrant is issued during an investigation of a crime, which can be issued even for such a minor infractions as mischief, theft, or gambling, according to the Globe and Mail. Well, mischief is the one I'd be scared about there. Theft is not a minor crime. Gambling is also not a minor crime. And thereafter, any information is actually gathered and kept. This sort of legislation would essentially build a searchable database accessible by a simple court order of all Canadians' internet, current, and prior usage and activities. One could use such a database to find people guilty of sharing MP3s with a friend or someone explaining the process of hacking into a computer on a public message board and bring such person to quote-unquote justice for the quote-unquote crimes they have committed. One could not, however, use such a database to track terrorists or child pornographers, as such individuals would be ensuring their anonymity. The bill would be introduced this fall, so it's coming in the fall. It has not made it to law yet, and I, as well as, Agent Thoth here, would advise that all Canadians write to their MPs in regards to this bill and any similar bills that will undoubtedly come down the pipe at a later date. Watch for add-ons on this sucker. This is one you definitely want to watch for add-ons for. In any case, it's probably high time for everyone, not just Canadians, to learn more about stuff like PGP, GBG, war driving, walking, biking, Tor, and anonymous P2P techniques in a web of publishing and file sharing, and of course, maybe Linux. Which is true, it's going to get more and more crazy sooner than you may think. Now, I've got a question about the PGP thing. You see, I would wonder if PGP and all this encryption is not really a dupe. Because by the news and trend technology, I believe, this may be a bad theory, but I believe that the NSA, FBI, any law enforcement agency, has the ability to crack all these encryption methods. So a great way to get you to flag your own transmissions that they may be illegal is to get you to encrypt them. You see what I mean? If you encrypt your transmission and you send an encrypted transmission, Who are you going to look at? Are you going to look at the guys sending back and forth the encrypted transmissions? Or are you going to look at the guys sending back and forth regular transmissions? I mean, if you were to use coded speech, you know what I mean? Like through other conversation where you talk about, you know, if I'm talking about this, I actually mean this. Or you have code words and things like that. That's a lot harder to encrypt. You know what I mean? Like that's a lot harder to try to track and figure out. Furthermore, what if we learned another language? Okay, what if we started talking back and forth in Navajo or something like that, and then using subtle nuances in Navajo? You see what I'm saying? Versus encryption, where all they got to do is take it, apply math to it, and bang, they're already in. It's a great. I've always thought that encryption is a great way to flag your own email for public scrutiny. It's a little weird, I know. Maybe I'm off on this one, but maybe people out there who know a little bit more about it than I do can comment on that. Again, newsreel@rantradio.com. Your daily hack today is about what is that stuff? And this is a great site because it actually explains the chemical compounds and reaction about stuff that's in like hair coloring, silly putty, cheese whiz, artificial snow, and self-tanners. Incidentally, self-tanners scare the living crap out of me. I'm not so sure I like that sort of thing. See, this is an engineering website. It connects a collection of articles that gives you a look at the chemistry behind a wide variety of everyday products. Very, very neat and a good piece of knowledge to arm yourself with. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information that you need to stay alive. This is a free radio broadcast, which means you can do anything you want with it, except sell it. Brought to you by the generous donations of 71 people for the month of July 2005, with 5 new people showing up. Which, when you consider that 76 people are the only numbers of people donating compared to the thousands and thousands of people downloading, it really shows you who's willing to pony up in a time of crisis, doesn't it? And those 76 people should be very proud of themselves, even though, you know, I wish I could give you more than that to just say you should be proud of yourself. But maybe sometimes that's all you really get, a silent pride and the knowledge of a job well done. If you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. And special thanks to everyone who made this broadcast possible. In many ways, in the cache, in gathering data, and if you have access to sensitive information or any pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel. That's newsreel@rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the compilation album, Monument 8. Really cool album, lots of good stuff on there. And I'm going to leave you now with a track by Gwar called Death Pod. Props to No Delete, who commented that this is very good WOG Mecha music. So until tomorrow, that's what server said. End of line.
Death Pod comes from the sky.
Bodilia. Ha, 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 ha. Now you shall receive.